outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Hey everybody, I'm in Kansas City, Kansas on a Saturday night in July, having just spent most of a weekend, we've still got a little bit to finish, on the Just Love Conversations with Toby van der Vesthuizen. My brother, hello, welcome to the United States.
Hi Wayne, thank you, it's wonderful to be here.
It's good to have you.
Yes.
We got to meet for the first time Thursday morning.
Thursday morning, yes.
How big of a disappointment was I?
You know what? The only thing that disappointed me was the amount of people that came into the restaurant, and we were overwhelmed by noise and happiness. that wasn't much of a distraction. You know,
we could move away from there, but yeah, we got in there, it was empty, and
yes,
within about 10 minutes, it was suddenly packed.
Yes, and apparently this is something you guys do in the USA.
Yeah.
Everybody just meets for lunch. We don't do that in South Africa.
You don't meet for lunch?
No. You go out at night.
Wow. Lunch is a great time to hang out, yak at people, and do all that good stuff.
Yeah. It was great. The food was great. The company was great. Conversation was great. Yeah. It's great to be here.
Revienne came with you, and Sarah did not come with me.
Yes.
We had three of us to chat around.
We did. And it was a blessing to get you guys also introduced to one another.
Mm.
And yeah, we had a great conversation.
We had a good time. Mm. Sum up the weekend for you, mate. What do you see in the Just Love conversation? We had about 40 people gather with us here over Thursday night, Friday, Saturday. We're finishing up tomorrow morning. Conversations have been lively, have they not?
I think so. You know, it's been absolutely amazing. I'm not looking forward to tomorrow, greeting all the new friends. You know, we ate together, we laughed together, we shared stories, we got into the Bible, and some of us shed a tear or two.
Mm.
But it's been great. Great bunch of people, great conversation, a lot of interaction, a lot of excellent questions, some uncertainty with regards to certain things.
Yep.
It was raised, but I think, you know, all of that was answered. Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. It's been excellent.
You've done this kind of thing before, more of a conversational approach than a lecture, yeah?
Yes, I do that. As a matter of fact, we do that pretty much every Sunday morning when we gather in our house, you know, with friends for just fellowship and prayer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the way we do it. You know, it's unplanned. The conversation dictates where we're going to go. Sometimes somebody asks a question and we open our Bibles, we speak about that, and the conversation goes into a direction that no one has planned. And oftentimes it's as much as a revelation for me as it is for everyone else.
Yeah, but it's a little bit different when you're working through a book and people have come for a certain kind of content. This is not just hanging out, having fellowship with each other.
Yes.
I was impressed with the group because very quickly they entered in and very quickly people felt safe enough to be real.
Yeah.
I didn't feel there was any posturing, people trying to look holy, look spiritual, ask the right questions, or be afraid to ask a question because they might look like they don't know what they're talking about. It just seemed to be very relaxed, and it allowed us to wander in some places that I didn't think we'd get to this weekend.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. Some people shared some things that they'd been struggling with, some real personal things, and I think it was a safe space to do so. You know, and I think the comments, you know, the way that others answered was very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, enlightening. It's really been enlightening, I think, for all of us.
Yeah. So what were some of your favorite topic points? For those that weren't able to join us this weekend, what are some of your favorite topic points that you got to cover this weekend?
I loved the conversation on desire and, you know, the place, purpose, and importance of Romans chapter 7. You know, we touched on it in the book, but our commitment was not to make the book a thick theological sort of overview of this whole thing. So, you know, the book doesn't go into depth as far as Romans chapter 7 and the whole debate around Romans chapter 7 is concerned. And I loved the fact that we had the time to explore this, you know, and ask, you know, questions and feedback. You know, to me, that was great. I just spoke to one of the...
In Romans 7, for those that don't know off the top of your head what that is, that's Paul's struggle with the very good I want to do, I don't do, and the very evil I don't want to do, that I end up doing. And,
yes.
You know, a wicked man that I am, and he gets to, but I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, so therefore it's not me doing it, but sin indwelling me, which is a great way to handle that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, I think it's been a debate throughout the ages. People are saying, is this pre-conversion Paul? Is Paul speaking about his past experience as a man under the law, trying to keep the law? Or is this Paul, you know, just lamenting the tension of trying to do good when my insides want to go in a different direction? You know, and it's been a theological debate for, you know, since forever.
Right.
And some denominations are very adamant that, you know, you can't read into this a past experience of Paul as though this belongs to pre-conversion days, because if you do that, you're pushing moral perfectionism, sinner's perfection. You know, so they interpret this as a type of, you know, a way to console us when we are in the same position and we do what we don't want to do and we don't want to, you know, we don't do what we want to do. And, you know, there's a bit of Pauline therapy. But I don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's the message that is conveyed.
One of the things that came out was our powerlessness against some of our desire.
Yes.
If it's not displaced somehow, if we don't find something to desire better than what our flesh is trying to seek to fill up the empty places in our life, then desire will win.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and that's the point of Romans 7. You know, we have this discussion of this man and he's struggling with certain things in his life and he's got these good intentions and he struggles to carry them out. If you actually go to the first part of Romans 7, you will see that he mentions the struggle by name. He says that I would not have known sin if it hadn't been for the law. I would not have known what it is to covet or desire if the law had not said, you shall not covet. And then he says, this commandment that was intended to bring life stirred up in me every kind of covetousness. So Paul was struggling with desire. That's what he is depicting here. A man who wants to do the good, but the desire on the inside prohibits him from doing this. So he was, in essence, he was breaking the 10th commandment, which is the prohibition against desire. And, you know, we touched on this in the book. I think it's important to understand just exactly how powerful desire is in a person's life if you have not encountered the love of God. It's not going to be something that you can conquer. You know, and I believe the message there is the law cannot change feelings. You cannot legislate from the outside in a sense of fulfillment. If you're hungry, I can't give you a commandment, you shall not be hungry, and in the process deal with the problem of your appetite.
Yeah.
You know, you need a filling, which is what Romans 8 is all about.
And Jesus is effectively saying about, or Paul writing about it, is the desire itself, even if you don't fulfill the desire, it's still being there. Jesus is saying that's the problem. The problem is inside. So even if you're good enough to repress it, which has been religion's answer for desire all along, let's just repress the bad ones and try and act on the good ones. And I think that's why people struggle. I think the discouragement of people who grow up in religious environments is, okay, I got saved and now I'm trying to be good, but I keep failing at being good.
Yes.
And then I feel like I have to question my conversion, I have to question my commitment to Christ, because we didn't help people explore what it means to find the fullness of love that conforms our desire in a beautiful way. So we end up desiring the things that are lovely for us.
Absolutely.
Instead of the things that are destructive. But it's not to destroy desire.
No, it's to redirect desire back to its rightful object. You know, and the beauty is that Paul's solution to the problem of Romans 7, the inability that we have to keep the 10th commandment, you know, keeping in mind that the 10th commandment prohibits not an action, but the inclination of the heart that precedes the action.
Yep.
You know, we mentioned that in the book. You know, the 6th commandment says you shall not murder. The 7th commandment says you shall not commit adultery, you know, and then stealing. And the 10th commandment says you shall not want to do any of these things. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You know, you shall not covet your neighbor's possessions. Right. You first covet before you take, before you sin. And Paul's response.
Or if you have enough wherewithal not to sin, the coveting produces that despair of, I don't have enough.
Yes.
I should have more.
Yes, absolutely.
And so even if you resist the action, yes, you still have this despair inside of the lack that you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And Paul's conclusion is that, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? And I love what Martin Lloyd-Jones says in his commentary on Romans. He says, the saved person does not speak like this. You know, this is not a regenerated, joyful person. There's a level of despair here that we can't, you know, you can't link this to salvation. And I think that's a wonderful point, you know.
Yep.
Now, the beauty is, this runs into chapter 8, and, you know, keeping in mind that the original manuscript doesn't have doesn't have verses. It's one story. It flows into this magnificent antidote for the problem of desire, namely, the fact that we have been set free from the law of sin and death, you know, that which produces the appetite for fullness, by having received the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus. The outcome being that the just requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us, who walk not according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. So that's magnificent. You know, here's the introduction of life as the essence, the substance of fullness that will fill me, and as we say in the book, in the process of being filled, we can fulfill the demand of the law. And then Romans 8, we spent some time speaking about the fact that we oftentimes stop here with a discussion. Romans 8 continues to introduce us to the substance of this law of life, namely the love of God. And that is where we read that God is for us, who can be against us? And we read, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? And we read, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. And I love that we made the point that what he's speaking about here, you know, I've heard this verse quoted in motivational seminars as though this is the recipe to get whatever I want in life. You know, I enlist Jesus as the cosmic genie who can come alongside and help me fulfill my desires. What this verse is saying is, I conquer the problem of Romans chapter 7 through him who loved me, because his love will fill me. And when I am filled with his love, the joy of being loved, the fullness of the life of God that is imparted to me through his love and by his Spirit will still the appetite. It will fill me. So we spend a lot of time, you know, speaking about this. And I think that was, you know, to me, that was a high point, because I think people really grasped this. And we really had good feedback afterwards, you know, after that session.
Yeah. It's really hard for people when we start talking about a just life and living with justice flowing out of us,
yes,
that people get, they take the performance mode of righteousness and just switch it over to justice, instead of realizing that what's behind that is we can't live the just life until we live loved and we live inside that love and let that love fill us.
Yes.
And from fullness, then our desires are altered.
Yes.
in a beautiful way, because I'm not reaching out for my lack to try to fulfill what I'm missing.
Yes.
But I'm embracing what God is giving me.
Yeah.
And being celebrating with that, with gratefulness, as we talked about. And I think that makes a great story. It also points to something else we spent quite a bit of time with. I think we really need to rethink how we invite people to know Jesus. because we just jump through a sinner's prayer and a forgiveness of thing, and then you kind of leave them to try and live the life by their own strength, by their own efforts. And when that repeatedly fails, when I, even if I can do it for a while, I was with a guy in New York recently who was going through, he just came to Christ. And in the enthusiasm of that, he left some major sin behind. And he just said, you know, for me, it, the will of God is here, and I was out of the will of God, and now I'm going to be in the will of God, and I've committed myself to this, and I'm just going to see it through. And I said, that'll last a few years. He said, what do you mean? I said, the strength of will, you in the euphoria of getting to know Jesus right now, strength of will take you always. But most of us know that in time, the strength of will fail you, because it's not a human effort thing. What you want to happen is, during this season of a burgeoning freedom, you want to let the fullness of Christ's love come and fill your heart. So it's not just a matter of will, it's a matter of fullness. Otherwise, you won't make it past 3 or 4 years.
Yes.
With that, you can make it for a lifetime, because my desire is really altered to things that are wonderful for me and a blessing to me, because it's what love produces in the heart.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And so if we're bringing people to Christ, it would be more, how do I help them experience love? I know people have been believers a long time and been through a lot of religious hoops saying, I don't know God's love from the inside. Mm-hmm. Well, that awareness is what we can help cultivate in people. Mm-hmm. And to me, what discipleship should be is not teaching them all the rules to follow. Mm-hmm. You said today the word disciple is just a learner. Just help people be learners, which learn from Jesus, have the connection with Him, so that you're a lifelong learner of what love looks like and how I live in it and how it shapes me in wonderful ways. And I think we miss that when we embed them in religious performance right from the beginning.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because remember somebody asked, you know, how does this all play into Matthew 28:19, the Great Commission?
Yes.
You know, we are to go into all the world and make disciples of all nations and baptize them. The point that we made was that is not a missionary calling per se. I mean, it could certainly include becoming a missionary, but this is a calling given to everybody. And the calling is make disciples, make apprentices, make learners, and bring them to a place where they can learn what Christ has commanded us, the things that He said that I have taught you, right? And the question is, well, you know, what are those things? What are those things that we need to teach? And what came out in the discussion was that is referred to at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, the greatest exposition of this justice that comes from God. And Jesus says, he who hears these words and do them is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. We know the passage, you know, the rain comes, the storm comes, it will not fall. But those who hear and who do not do, they are the ones who are foolish. They build their house on the sand. And when the storm comes, that house is going to collapse. Now that's at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and you have three magnificent chapters where the fulfillment of the law is right in the center. And the fulfillment of the law is discussed as that which Christ came to do. This was His mission. I have not come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've come to fulfill them. Now what is this fulfillment? It is the superior justice that surpasses the justice of the Pharisees and the scribes. And we spent some time, you know, speaking about the all the hedge laws and the fence laws that these guys had created to try and keep them from, by accident, breaking one of the commandments of the Mosaic law. You know, and the question that came up was, well, you know, how on earth can my justice surpass that? And Jesus explains it in a beautiful fashion by pointing to the exact principle that Paul speaks about in Romans chapter 7, namely the problem of desire. He says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. He quotes the seventh commandment. But I say unto you that if you look at a woman with lustful intent, you have already committed adultery. And the Greek word is desire. So he's saying, you know, what I'm telling you is that the fulfillment of the law is to get taken out of the ninth commandment, to be put into the tenth commandment. The ability to keep the tenth commandment namely not to desire things outside of God for your fullness. And as we say in the book, the moment that you can keep the 10th commandment, you don't need the first 9 commandments to restrain you. You are free from the law, yet you are not lawless. This is what is being explained in the Sermon on the Mount. And then Jesus says, you need to hear these words and do these words. And in Matthew 28, he says, go into all the world, make apprentices, make learners, and teach them to do the words that I told you. So that's what it is. It's really spreading this message of the just love of God, the justness that is revealed through his love. And then, you know, I think we all agreed, what a liberating, wonderful way to become, you know, sent ones, emissaries of this message, and spread it. And we can do it anywhere. You can do it at your workplace. You know, Rev and I can do it at our school.
Right.
It's a calling for everyone. This is not a, you know, this is not just a calling to go to the farthest ends of the earth. And
it was for them, right? The disciples were asked to do that.
Yes.
And they did it.
Yeah.
But it's been used so many times to preach and say, everybody must go on the mission field. Everybody must go. Yeah. And really, most of how we share the life of Jesus is the overflow of life in us as we love and care about people around us. It's not even taking a tract. It's not witnessing. I wonder, when you get to what would be building your house on the sand look like? Yeah. The rock is God's love that will hold us through anything. Yes. And the sand's got to be the religious performance of trying to do it on my own. Because you can do that when things are good. Yeah. And it's like so many people I've talked to, and I struggle with this in my own life. You can do the things God wants you to do as long as everything goes good. And then when something goes bad or you feel discouraged or God didn't do something for you you felt he ought to do, that discouragement just brings up all the old desires. And you get swept away by the flood of your own discouragement because God isn't doing what you want to do. It's the same reaching outside of God to get what only he can give us.
Yes.
The love and knowing you're loved, even when tough times come, that love will hold you. It won't just incubate the desires of old again, like we call backsliding or whatever that people do. It really holds us inside his reality. And then, man, we can find our way through the challenges of life to find our way through with his love.
Yes.
Intact in us.
Yes, absolutely. Wayne, I'm curious. You've asked me, you know, what stood out. What did you make of the last 3 days? I mean, we still got tomorrow morning, but you, if you reflect on that, what was a high point for you?
Well, I think I shared the one thing about salvation. Rethinking how that happens would be one of them. I like all that we kind of got into to help people experience love instead of just hold it as a theological thought. So the taste and see language that you use today of, you know, this is what the invitation is. Come taste me. Come see that I'm good. We want people to turn around and follow Jesus because they're going to burn in hell if they don't. So they don't come to Christ to taste and see. They're trying to get out the emergency door before they die in an accident driving home from a meeting or something. And I love that freedom to just take a breath, let God reveal himself to you. And sitting with other people who want to know Jesus and not hurrying them to the conclusion you can orchestrate, which is I can get people to pray this prayer, do this act of baptism, make these commitments. Mm. But if they don't engage presence inside love, we've both talked about that as being the most important part of our life. The book is as much about love as it is justice. That's why it's just love.
Yes.
It really is not, now, let's all be just. It's no, let God write his justice on your heart as you are experiencing what it is to be a beloved child of a gracious father.
Yes.
And if you don't know that yet, and other than intellectually, I mean, know it, not, be settled in it, in your heart. We talked about awareness today. I like that word awareness. It's not I feel his love, although you will at times, but it's really being aware of his love and aware of presence. I think love and presence go hand in hand.
Oh, yeah.
And when you divorce the two, which is religion often does, because we can't control presence. So we like to do things we can control. So we sing now, so God shows up. We teach here, this, instead of, no, it's presence comes as God moves.
Yes.
And learning to be a responder to his movement rather than the orchestrator or the cultivator, the one I've got to bring God down.
Yes, and if you think about it, you know, the desire works against presence. You know, because desire anticipates a future event which literally separates your joy from where you are. Mm. So you project it into the future with some or other imagination exercise. Yeah. You know, it's like a fantasy of fullness.
Yeah.
And we've oftentimes touched on that, you know, that is, you know, that was the serpent's smokescreen. You know, that's the way that he got to Eve and to Adam, because the Bible says he was right there with her.
Right.
Okay. So we don't want to blame it on the women.
No, we don't. Even though Adam did.
Yeah, he did.
It's not wise to do so.
We don't want to do that. But he was right there with her all along. You know, note that.
Yep.
But you know, the temptation was to look away from what God had given them in the moment, in the now, in the present, the gift of life, the fullness of that garden and the blessings. I mean, what a stupid thing to do, to want the one thing that I don't have and in the process forfeit the hundreds that I do have. But that's what they did, because he was saying to them, you know what, there's something that you don't have. And then he somehow convinced them that it was rightfully theirs. And this, you know, this is a point that we made, and I think this is important. You know, I think we should mention it. That what the serpent was doing in essence was he was creating a justice system. He was saying, you are being treated unjustly. Here's something that, you know, that really should belong to you. And it's not. It's out of your reach. The reason it's out of your reach is because, you know, God wants to keep it for himself. And he's fearful that you will become like him. And the implication is, you know, that's not just. So why don't we set things right? Why don't you appropriate what is rightfully yours? Okay? There's justice as equality. That stirred up desire, because it focused, you know, it shifted the focus from what they had to what they didn't have. And the fact that it belonged to somebody else, well, you know, the way to overcome that is to simply just take it. And that's what they did. You know, Eve didn't say to Adam, hey, you know what, I got an idea. You know, let's become extremely unjust. let's sin. Let's feel what it's like to bring sin into this place. They didn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, they thought it was equality with God. You know, that sounds fair. And we need to appropriate what he has in order to attain to that equality. And that's what they did. And we spoke about how that plays into even experiences of trauma. And I think that is very important. How people sometimes deal with hurt and pain by creating a justice system. In other words, I have been robbed, and how I'm going to compensate for my loss is by taking that which belongs to another.
It's not that calculated, is it? It's just the,
no.
I feel so bad on the inside, I'm going to grab what I can get from someone else to try and appease that, so I don't feel so destructive on the inside. And we also talked about how today we live in a world that absolutely incubates our frustration. It's the media, what you don't have that you should have. And it's to spur on us to buy every product in the world and to look at, well, they get to have that and I don't get to have that. We live in a world where this, what we're talking about now, if you don't find your contentment in the presence of Christ in you and what he's given you and relish in what you have, then you're going to be sucked away by a world that's pushing you down a rapids that's filled with frustration and disappointment and despair.
Yes.
In things.
Yeah.
It's not even in him.
And resentment. You know, we spent some time discussing the, you know, this point that resentment is really covetousness that has been disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, so I resent you because when, you know, when we entered into this relationship, I had certain expectations. And did not live up.
I'm sorry, I did my best.
That's not good enough. I'm sorry.
Sorry too.
I resent you because you did not function as my supply. So I've got reason.
You wanted me to?
Yes, of course.
I don't believe you did.
I mean, what is the purpose of a relationship if I can't get something out of it? And that is, you know, that is desire. I don't know if you use that word over here in the USA. You know, we in South Africa we would say that is desire backfiring.
Hmm.
Yeah. In other words,
I don't think we use that, but it makes sense.
Yeah, so it's just going in the opposite direction. And that's resentment. And presence is being immunized against the anticipation of some or other future pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that will give me happiness. Because God is in the here, God is in the now. I love the definition of presence as the intersection of the now of time with the year of space. In other words, you're only present if you are here with me. And you're only present if that is now. If you're here now. Mm. And God's presence means He is here and He's here now. Now I think of my pastoral past, and then I think of the amount of times that we try to get the congregation excited by saying, this is going to happen next year. You know, 2018 is the year of fullness. 2019 is the year of breakthrough. And, you know, we're going to have this conference next week. We're going to have the healing revival. And we create anticipation as the momentum of the ministry.
Yeah.
But nobody ever arrives.
Right.
You know, and that's a sad thing. But we play into people's desire by making them promises. And you can only keep people enchanted with promises or fulfillment for so long, and then they're going to go to other pastures because it doesn't pay off.
Yeah,
you know, and then they have the resentment. You know, then they'll discuss their church that does not live up to their demands.
Yeah,
you know. So,
and in both ways, you've got we talk about the difference between in the flow of life. It's the giving of life that we have in abundance into the lack of someone else.
Yes,
but most of our religious ministry things all preys on your lack, and we'll fill it for you.
Yes.
Or you have money we need for our ministry, or you have time and energy and effort, and we want to take your life here.
Yes.
And that becomes the twist. Like you said today, where a lot of ministerial actions are predatory.
Yes.
Not just as it's manifested in the sexual abuse that often happens in these kinds of settings. This day it's being exposed. But it's just the relationship from the beginning is, I have a vision and you come and serve my vision. Mm-hmm. So it starts with the man up front who's trying to satisfy his vision by getting from people their life, which is the opposite of how this whole thing works. It's life in you, life through you.
Yes.
And that it's when we lose that, when we upset that balance, then we're always, even in our relationships, like you just talked about, I have expectations that you will make me happy. And when you don't make me happy, I get to be frustrated and angry and upset because I live not as a part of the life that's flowing through me, so I'm seeking a recipient to embrace it, but now I've got to find a source to make me happy outside of God. And even if you get it for a minute, it'll be gone the next day.
Yes.
Even people talk about saving up for something, this house, this car, they get it. 2 days later, the newness is gone, and I must seek something else to mask the emptiness that I feel in the absence of fullness.
That's correct. And the only way in which we can be delivered from this is in the absolute contentment of God. This is something that we spent some time, focusing on, is that the highest form of worship is living the just life. Because the just life speaks of contentment. I don't seek to be fed by you, you know, or to be filled by you. I don't create a relationship with that in mind. I don't have to, because I have the fullness of God in me. And then we said that, you know, God's perfection is best expressed in humanity's contentment. Because if I'm content in Him, what am I saying? I'm saying He's perfect. He is everything I need. And that enables me to live justly towards others by becoming a giver rather than a taker. And that glorifies God, because implicitly I'm celebrating His fullness through my life of justice springing forth from my contentment. So that's not rocket science, is it?
And it says He's enough even if I lack stuff. Because the lack doesn't become important. You say, I may not have that, but I don't need that to be full, to be content, to be in Him. And that really conveys to people that God is enough.
Absolutely.
And yet the enemy's accusation is always, you're not enough.
Yes.
You should be able to, you should do more. You should. That's how the enemy just berates us into trying harder, performing more, and failing more, and being frustrated more.
Yeah. Yes.
I was just going to say, as we look back over these days, we don't have a lot of time left, but do you wish we had things in the book that are not there, having now discussed it with people and hearing comments and things? Is there something we missed in your mind?
I don't think so. You know, I think there's a ton of things that we could have put in.
Oh, there's more we could have said, for sure.
Absolutely. And I mean, we could have taken these 4 days and extended it to 14 days, and we still wouldn't have gone through it. You know, I mean,
yes.
The conversation is just magnificent. You know, and every time that, you know, we reach the end of a session, you know, we break, then it feels like we've just scratched the surface. And
in some ways, but I also love to, one lady said today, it's so simple.
Yes.
And the nods around the room. So we're talking about pretty, a breadth of historical revelation of God in human history.
Yes.
And we're talking about the scriptures and what they really mean. And so we're talking about some really, really important big ticket items.
Yes.
But the fruit of it is, that's really simple.
Yes.
When you embrace it. And I think we got there with people. I think people step back and say, I may not kind of explain it the way Toby does or the way Wayne does, but I can live this.
Yes.
I can watch and cultivate a responsiveness to the way God makes himself known in me and be content with that and watch what God does.
Yeah, without a doubt. Something, you know, that I loved that came up is that if you are in the business of giving life, you can only give what you have received.
Yeah.
Because the life comes from God. You know, we spoke about the burden of a certain type of ministry that expects you to give what you have not received. And that, you know, that leads to a type of ministry that will soon be identified as being fake, because people will see that, you know, this guy's trying to do something that he's not.
Yes.
So the beauty of all of us understanding that God only expects us to share that which we have at our disposal, you know, like the widow, you know, with a one penny.
Yep.
And that's what she gave. It's all she had to give. And the Lord said she gave more than all the others. And the liberty of understanding that my ministry of dispensing the justness of God's love wherever I go does not depend on some precondition of having this massive storage of whatever it is that I need to give.
Yeah.
I only got to give what he's given me. And he's given all of us a measure of life.
Or to feel guilty if I don't have what somebody wants from me.
Absolutely.
So yes. I don't have their wisdom. You know, they may be asking a question, I don't have it. I don't have to give it.
Yes.
If I don't have it, same thing with financial resources or anything else. You get to live inside your freedom and your provision. And to me, that's a big exhale. That's
yes.
It. Oh, my gosh. I can give what God has given. I can give it freely because I don't own it. It wasn't mine to start with. Makes it easier to be generous in the world, to the ability you have to be generous.
Absolutely. What a liberty, what a liberation, what a joy and a freedom to live like that. And, you know, to take every situation that God sends across our path as an opportunity to live that out with that which he has given you.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. One thing, Wayne, that I want to mention that was quite striking. Right at the outset, the first session, you ask people, you know, what are your expectations? You know, why are you here? I was sort of hoping that everybody would want to, you know, learn the depths of this revelation and, you know, study the Bible. And you know what people said? I'm here because I want to connect to others who had the same revelation. And I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're not here just for a Bible study. I mean, the Bible study is fantastic. But I want to connect with others who are reading this book, who are embarking on this journey, and is asking this question, how can love make right what I am involved in? The problem in my marriage, the problem at my work, whatever situation I face. How can we do this? And how can we connect and assist one another? And I just thought that was wonderful.
I did too.
You know, yeah, the need for community to discuss this. And I always said, you know, this should be discussed in community because this is so communal.
Yeah.
And it's like everybody got it. And it was magnificent.
And dysfunctional community is, I'm trying to get from somebody what I'm not getting from them.
Yes.
And there's the frustration, anguish of power plays and whatever. Manipulate the community to get what I want.
Yeah.
If you live this one-way thing, that the source of life is in God, He fills me with it. I'm looking to give life in the world. I'm not looking to take life. I'm looking to give it.
Yes.
And then when someone comes around who also is living that way, they're giving life not because I expect it and need it, just because it's overflowing from them too. That to me is the beauty of real community, yes. Not based around each other's needs,
yes.
But sharing fullness and sharing wisdom and insight. And if I'm struggling with the decision, to be able to invite some people alongside to be with me, not that they're my answer and not that they've got to fix this for me, but simply help me see where God is moving here so I can join Him there.
Amen. Absolutely. Do you think we had a foretaste of that these couple of days?
Oh, every time I get, in New York two weeks ago, yes. Everywhere I go, when I hang out with people, I say, and I don't know how, from some of the books I've written and the podcasts we do, I know some of the best people on the planet.
Yeah.
I love the journeys of the people I run into. As much those who are new and struggling, as those who could read Just Love and go, well, of course.
Yeah.
And other people read it and go, this can't be right. And there's a growth curve to it.
Yes.
But those like I did when we started exploring this together, I go, I already know this. I know this is the way I live.
Yeah.
And but now I have some of the scriptural stuff that you've researched that really adds the language to it from Scripture that's really powerful. So I thank you, my brother.
Thank you. Wayne, looking forward to tomorrow morning.
Is there more you wanted to say before?
No.
Okay.
I just wish all of the listeners were here with us. We'll have to do this every year, Wayne.
The real test of Phil, that's what some people are saying, but you know, they're out of their minds. To me, the real test of community and things like this is, I want to take those people home and move them in neighborhoods.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I enjoy the interaction. And that's part of the frustration, too, because a lot of people go home to be a minority in their community of people who think this way. And the conversations that you can have around this are so powerful. But you can't have those online if you need to. Well, you need two or three people that kind of keep this in your heart when the weight of religion is trying to suck you back into some kind of performance ethic. And I love that. I love the people I get to meet. I have so many friends around the world that I wish lived down the street and across the town and hang out in a coffee shop together. And I don't even like coffee, so that'd be quite a gift. Well, I'm glad you came, brother. I'm glad we had this chance.
It's been amazing. It's been amazing to meet you, Wayne, and to meet some of your friends, you know.
This is the craziest thing, right? We wrote a book together we never met.
Yes. Well, now we have.
Yeah, now we have. Now we can't say that anymore.
Yes.
But we wrote the book before we met.
We did. Yeah, it can be done. We've proven it.
It turns out that you're pretty much who I thought you were from being on Zoom with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm happy to hear that.
I don't come away saying, oh, I'm surprised. You're not who I thought he was, and now I don't know what I'm going to do. I think it speaks to your authenticity.
Okay, well,
that what you see is what you get in person or on camera. So thanks for joining us. We thought we'd bring you alongside some of what happened while we were here in Kansas City. And tomorrow we finish up with a bit of a session and then head for the airport. And you get to hang out another week with your family.
I do. And then it's back to South Africa.
So if you can find your way to Kansas City next weekend, let him know. You can come and hang out with you for the weekend.
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah.
I love these conversations.
Oh, good. Blessings.
Great. Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.